Welcome back to Arts About.
A show about art that's a work of art in itself. G'day, Mark.
Hi, John.
I said while you're away, I was happy you're away, but now I'm happy to see you.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, John.
I'm happy to see you too.
I'm back happy to
Hi, Sally.
Hiya, John. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. And yes, we've had some sickness amongst the ranks.
Mm.
Good to see Mark back. I'm just getting my voice as well. Welcome, everybody, to another Sunday morning with me, Sally Bailiw, and artist-in-residence and cultural sounding board John Baird, and Mark Stewart back on deck. And, of course, Brodie Guzet is keeping us appropriately technically balanced this morning. So, John, you hit the dizzy limits at the Artists for Kids Culture last week,
that
didn't you?
That was good fun.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and very rewarding for me, not only for that painting to get, what happened was that a painting got a very good price at
an
a charity
auction. An extremely
good
price of your, for one
and
of your works.
And it was not only good to have that happen, but it was good to have that happen in front of that particular crowd.
Yes, 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 yes. There's no going back now, is there?
Oh, there's always going back. I can fail again, Sally, I'm sure.
It's very exciting and very, very deserved, I should say. What have you got for us this week?
We're going to talk about the free bus.
The free bus?
Yep.
What free bus?
Well, we'll see.
Oh, okay then. Very good. Mm. Okay, the free bus. And Mark, you've had a couple of weeks to ruminate on something. What are you going to spit it with us?
Well, I'm going to talk about Donald Friend a little bit.
Yeah.
And Harvey Weinstein.
Oh.
Bit of Hollywood and Point Lear Estate.
Which we're all rather excited to hear about.
And a film called Loving Vincent.
Oh.
So I've got quite a bit to talk about.
Okay, that's good. Well, luckily I've allotted quite a long time for you towards the end of the show. Looking forward to that. It's also the Summer's Art Fair today, and the Artable P team are down there live on site in the broadcast van. And I think soon after this show today, they're actually going to have the auction of all the art pieces that have been displayed there.
As is their wont.
As is their wont, and as Yvonne Watson from Oak Hill Gallery talked about last week.
Mm.
Yes, so if you're in the vicinity and would like to support,
what are they actually auctioning? The poles?
No, they're not auctioning the poles. They're auctioning all the artworks that are hanging in the classrooms.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some of them. There's some of them I think that you can buy by putting a red dot on them, but I think that there's also an auction. So I'm not
auctions
exactly
are very
sure.
exciting, as I've discovered recently. But
absolutely. Well, you are now the king of the auctions, aren't you?
No.
No, not the king.
No, not the king, no. But things did go well there. Anyway, I'm sure things will go well down at down in Summers today.
Yeah, raising money for the
If you're there, school. Get into it. If you're not, go there.
A little later, in fact, coming up next, we have Jonathan Cecil, who is the director of ArtNet International and also of John Cecil Fine Art, which has an exhibition of Tim Storia's prints and lithographs down there at John Cecil's gallery in Red Hill. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that in a few minutes. Before we do, here is Vancouver singer-songwriter Dan Bejar of the band Destroyer, who's often been compared to early Bowie. This is a song called Tinseltown Swimming in Blood from his album Ken. It's a very good time to be exhibiting the work of the idiosyncratic Australian painter Tim Storia, as I'm sure our next guest, Jonathan Cecil, will attest to. Jonathan is, among many things, the director of ArtNet International, one of the world's leading online galleries dedicated to contemporary limited edition original prints. And he's also the owner-operator of John Cecil Fine Art in Red Hill that has taken up home in Red Hill just earlier this year. Currently, the gallery is exhibiting 70 limited edition lithographs, etches and screen prints of this most celebrated artist, Tim Storia. At a moment in time that has the artist both disparaging the processes that have led him to question the very process that has brought him to mainstream success in Australia and won him the coveted Moran Prize. Having been overlooked in the hanging of this year's Archibald, the painter who was the youngest ever winner of the Sulman Prize at 19 in 1968 has gone on to win the even richer Moran Prize this year with his portrait of fellow artist McLean Edwards. And he's not shied away from levelling some tough criticism at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, describing the government body of trustees who select the winners as a postmodernist cabal. Good morning and welcome to Arts About, John Cecil.
Hi, Sally.
Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Yeah. Oh, it's a pleasure. And Yes, I think Tim would see all that actually with quite an amused eye.
You know? Do you think so? Yes. Yeah. Well, let's dive in straight away. Let's have a little bit of a chat about Tim Storia. I mentioned a little earlier, he was the youngest person to ever win the Solomon Prize
in 1968.
Yeah. He was 19 years old or something like that. And he's gone on to win or to be selected for the Archibald and to have won the Archibald among many other prizes. What is it about him that is sort of really, grasped the Australian psyche or really ignited an interest?
Well, he's a country boy to begin with, and a lot of his work is of vast landscapes and skyscapes and nightscapes, stars, and that's always been his theme. He also loves, above all, funnily enough, black snakes. And you see his snakes creeping in or crawling into some of his work. One of the fire series we've got has got a very fat black snake in it. But his logo as well, the S of Storia, is a snake. So he has these childhood interests and background that really come into all of his work. And he's very Australian. You couldn't be more Australian than Tim. He's a meticulous craftsman in everything he does. So he's extraordinary, and he's up there with Olsen and some of the, even Brett Whiteley, the major Australian artists. And back in the 80s, he was working in Lavender Bay. John Firth Smith, Brett Whiteley, they're all there as a little cabal. Use that word again. He's really a major player on the Australian art scene. His work is always fascinating. And we've got, as you said, we've got quite a lot there on show at the gallery in Redhill. So I hope people can come along and have a look.
Now, as I guess lots of artists do, and I learned a little bit more about printmaking actually when you were in here last time talking about Lloyd Rees, is that artists quite often work in collaboration with a great printmaker, which I think you collaborate with yourself, Fred Jenness, is that correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So we don't. Now, I hadn't necessarily thought about Tim Storia actually as a printmaker before, but clearly that is something that he's been interested in.
Well, they say that the prints are the democratic form of art because they're more affordable than the paintings, but they are original works of art, and they increase in value the same way as the paintings do. But he loves printmaking. Most of the major artists, even in Europe, you know, Picasso, Matisse, they're all huge fans of printmaking, and they work with an artisan like Fred Jenness to produce the work. And Tim's no exception. What's nice about his printmaking is that his printed works follow his painted and constructional work. So you can follow his life work through his prints just as you can through his paintings and his constructions.
Well, kind of prints are they, John?
Largely, the more recent work is lithographs, but he was a big etching fan. Going back, he worked with Port Jackson Press to produce some really good etchings back in the 70s, and then in the 80s he became involved with Fred Jenness and started to work on his landscapes as lithographs.
I'll tell you something, if I may, about Tim Storia, as I see it anyway, that he was a jackaroo when he won the Solomon Prize, 19 years old and a jackaroo. Mm. And in fact, he heard about having won the prize while standing around a fire on a very arid landscape. And his paintings of fires on arid landscapes undoubtedly refer to him learning about that prize and where he was when that happened. And burning ropes, I think, have to do with him no longer following a course that he perhaps was going to follow through jackarooing and farming and being in the bush. And once he'd learned of that prize, then that particular thread was destroyed. And he always has a kind of legible reference to something to do with either his life or, as we talk about, the profound thread. So other artists or his own life are always referenced very strongly in what he does. And I agree with you. I think he's a very important artist. I don't particularly like his paintings, frankly, but I think he is a very important artist.
Well, come and have a look at his prints.
I will. Yes. I'll do that.
Because they're really interesting. And
so from what year did the prints start? What in your collection?
The earliest work was the Camp at Relay series, which he did back in the late 60s, early 70s with Port Jackson Press. and they're quite pale and subtle compared to his more recent work.
Are they some of the rainbows, the leaning rainbows against the wall, or?
I haven't seen Leaning Rainbows Against Walls.
No, because I knew Tim at Mangrove Mountain.
I was going to ask you that question. Yeah. I figured that you might.
And in Lavender Bay, I knew his house there. He's a big collector of American Civil War memorial. And he came to Mangrove Mountain a couple of times, and he gave me a print, which is of the rainbow leaning against the wall.
I would love to see that. Because there's an English artist called Patrick Hughes who does very similar work of rainbows leaning against walls or coming through windows. Fascinating. I'd love to see that.
I'll check it. Yeah. I'll get it from my mother.
Well, it's it's impossible really to be talking about him at the moment without mentioning the great sort of... Do we call it a scandal or do we call it a hubbub? Because, of course, Tim was nominated or presented one of his work, this portrait that we have in front of us here of MacLean Edwards, into the Archibald Prize, and it was not selected to hang in that prize, and yet... several short months later, submitted into the Moran, where it's won a much bigger prize, in fact. It begs the question, it's really interesting in fact, you asked it a little bit earlier, Mark, how could that happen? And I think really can one painting go into both of those prizes and have such differing results?
As Tim says in this article that is here, that it's all about the being politically correct and including as many people as you like, which is it's very generous, it's very democratic, but it does tend to lead towards a form of mediocrity, which we don't really accept completely. And Tim is, being a man of a certain age, you could be called a grumpy old man if you like, but he's actually quite successful, so he's not grumpy at all. But he is quite, I think it's quite true what he says about the fact that Moran is not a politically, it's a free judging, whereas the Archibald is part of the Art Gallery of New South Wales, and they have an agenda.
Yeah.
And so they have to include people. And we can all go to Geelong Gallery, which is opening on the 28th. The Archibald is coming. All the paintings will be there. We can all go and judge for ourselves what we think of.
Mm-hmm. One wonders whether or not the judges of the Moran were aware of the fact that it had been rejected by the...
Surely.
The Art Gallery of New
South Wales. It's Wendy Sharp and Greta, somebody else.
Of course they would be.
They would know.
Yes.
So was there... I mean, they may have been...
Trying to put one... up the
gallery. Just saying to the gallery.
That's conjecture. I think the truth is that it is a brilliant painting, and that they probably just didn't see it at the Archibald. You see, I mean, I talked about this show where they show the people, the judges selecting. They're going through at the rate of about three paintings every 30 seconds. It's just unbelievable.
It's very hard to imagine that they wouldn't see it, and particularly given that Tim Story himself was part of that trustee board at some point, not that long beforehand.
Mm. I think they probably think that he's had enough success. And that
well, he did win the Archibald in 2015 with the histrionic Wayfarer, based on Hieronymus Bosch, amazing portrait.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Faceless portrait, his face blowing away on a piece of paper in the background.
Yes, that's right. I had missed that actually in my first viewing of it, that he was in fact in the the painting too. Yes.
And his description of the trustees as a cabal of postmodernists is interesting. I mean, who's ever heard of such a thing?
Look, we know that's all true. This is one of the facts. Yeah. It's one of the facts about galleries and prizes is that there is an agenda now. It's not only in art, it's in fashion, it's in politics. The idea of identity politics is going right through the whole sort of culture and history, and it's something that's just part of life now. But the thing about Tim is his own success is so powerful that he doesn't really care, finally.
And his work is so eclectic.
And it's so eclectic.
It's really unusual.
It is.
And beautifully finished. Everything is beautifully painted, and he's a true draftsman.
Yes.
So he's a great artist, and I'm very pleased to be showing these prints, and I hope that...
So when is the show? Until when is it?
We've extended it now because of the Moran Prize. We've extended it to November the 18th.
So. Okay, yeah. Great.
Oh, that's terrific. So tell us a little bit about some of the works that you've actually got included in there, because lots of us are familiar with with Tim Story's paintings, but not necessarily all of them. What's the breadth like of the work that you've got?
As I said, they follow his bigger works, his paintings and constructional works, very, very closely. Mm-hmm. That's one of the nice things about Story. He always did a print of the subject of his bigger paintings.
Ah.
So it goes from those early days, the Camp at Relay, when he also went out to Lake Eyre with John Olsen and all that lot, when they did that wonderful tour. And then he got into the, in the 80s, into these, it started with a painting called Point to Point, which was a burning rope in the desert.
Yep.
And then he started doing burning logs and black snakes and all this. Mm-hmm. So most of that work is on display with us. There's about 30 works up on the walls, and then the rest are in the print drawers for anyone who wants to look at them. I can pull them out for...
Fabulous. Now, tell us a little bit about John Cecil Fine Art. It's been going now in Red Hill for...
Yes.
It was earlier on this year that you opened, wasn't it?
We started with the Lloyd Rees show.
That's right, yeah. Yes.
So, what we're about is original limited edition prints by major artists. So it's not a tourist gallery showing pictures of the beach. It's major contemporary work on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the next show we're doing after Tim Story will be John Olsen.
Oh, yes.
And
okay.
Then next year we're doing a David Hockney show and so on. So it's... I think it's good. I mean, I'm really pleased to be doing it because the peninsula is so beautiful to live down here and to be able to open a gallery here, which will also be a restaurant shortly.
Oh, will it? Yes, very good.
Is a very timely arrival, I think.
Because the venue that you're actually in was a restaurant
was
to
a
begin
restaurant
with, wasn't
called
it?
Puffs. Yeah,
that's right. It's, which is on Red Hill Road.
Called Red Hill Road, now it's called Arthur's Seat Road. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes, all right.
John, there's a growing sort of interest, I think, in artist-made prints because there is now so many of those Giclée reproduction prints around that rather than competing, they're kind of making the difference even more obvious between... what is an artist-made print and what is a piece of paper with a reproduction on it.
Yes, and they are reproductions. Right. They're photographs of paintings that are printed, beautifully printed, and then signed and given...
And often very desirable, but they're in a different world to...
They're not the real thing.
Yeah, to artist-made prints.
Not the real thing. They are the real thing. We have an artist, Alexander Stitt, who worked on the computer, and he did the work on the computer himself, and that would qualify as an original print. But where it's a photograph or a reproduction of a painting, that really doesn't qualify.
Right.
So,
if people want to get down to your gallery, what are the kind of hours are you open?
We're open Friday till Monday from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. So 4 days a week.
Yep.
And during summer, we might extend those hours as well. So.
And do you or will you have a website?
We do have a website. Do you want me to give you the...
Yes, please. Yeah.
It's artnet.net.au and also johncecilart.com.au. So either of those will get you to our website.
Terrific. I'll put some links on the our Facebook page so that people can find that easily. It's wonderful. It's running, the Tim Story exhibition is running until...
November the 18th.
November the 18th. That's fantastic. Yep. It's a great opportunity to get down and see some of this remarkable artist's work close up and firsthand. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today,
great
John
pleasure,
Cecil.
Sally. Lovely to see you
soon.
Yep.
Nice to see you, John. See you down there.
Great.
Now, here's a few messages from our sponsors coming up. And if you're on your way or thinking of going down to the Summer's Art Fair, don't forget, it's on this afternoon and the auction's coming up soon.
You may remember, Mark, that when I was a young man, I was a bit of a hippie. And at that time, a friend of mine went out and he bought a bus. Like a...
Simon Hicks.
Oh, I wasn't going to name him. But
he's outed now. Simon Hicks, are you
it's
listening?
It wasn't like a tour bus that was ready for conversion to a camper kind of outfit. It was a suburban bus, one of those big blocks with a...
Is this the one that had all the bean bags in it?
No, that was a bread van.
Oh.
This is a bigger bus.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
This is a real thing. This is a great big suburban bus. And May...
He had read not on the road, what was it? Tom Wolfe book about the yellow bus.
Oh, yeah.
Ken Kesey and all of them. They're all
I'm sure he'd read that. Yeah, Simon we'd all read it.
Yes.
Anyway, he had the bus and it was set up so that it had two long... rows of benches with standing room in between them, and then the last third of it was sort of facing forward seating. And the first thing we did when this bus arrived was rip all the forward facing seating out, and we bolted in there three leather settees that we got from op shops and a little coffee table. So there was a.
This sounds like the. Oh, what was that band that went to David Cassidy, the Cassidy family?
Plenty of people have done this, sort of converted buses into all sorts of things. But we had the leather settees and the coffee table, but we left the other suburban kind of seating in place. The idea being that you could sleep three people on the leather couches and another four on the benches, which meant that, you could sleep seven in there. Which is about ideal for going to festivals, which is what we set off to do one Saturday morning.
Except that they did the interior, but they didn't bother doing the engine.
No, the engine was pretty crappy, and the outside of it looked exactly like a suburban bus. It hadn't been decorated in any way, and we had to go out to, as I remember, out to Oakley.
Which was a long way out in those days.
I'm not sure why we went to Oakley, but we did.
Maybe you ice skating.
From Oakley, we were going to the Dandenongs to go to a hippie festival of some sort. And on the way from Oakley out to Dandenong, we realised that we in fact had a sign on board that goes above the windscreen of the bus that had written on it, Dandenong.
Mm-hmm.
So we put Dandenong on the front because that's where we were going.
Yes.
And headed off. And sure enough, on the way, there was a man standing at a bus stop. And so Simon pulled over and opened the door. And this guy got on the bus and he looked around and he narrowed his eyes and he said, "This is not the normal bus, is it?"
Gosh.
And we pointed out that it wasn't the normal bus, but we were going to Dandenong nonetheless, and he was happy to sit down. And at the next couple of stops along, there were three elderly ladies, and they were waiting for the bus, and we pulled up and opened the door, and they were very happy to get on. They were delighted to find that no fares were going to be asked of them. And they went down and sat on the leather settees and said, "Oh, this is nice."
The days before seatbelts.
Yeah, didn't doubt that that they were on the correct bus, and we headed off. Simon had to ask directions for the bus stop in Dandenong, which from the young man who'd got on, and he said, "Oh, you just go down into Dandenong, you turn down where the market is there in the side street, and that's where the bus normally stops." So that's where we went and opened the doors and everyone got off and we headed off to our festival.
And had a fabulous time.
We did have a fabulous time.
Sounds like so much fun.
Did you ever get on that bus, Mark?
No, the bus didn't make it. It was coming up to Noosa Heads where I was living at the time and they broke down, I think, in Echuca or somewhere.
Right.
And that was the end of the bus.
Right. They didn't have a sign for Noosa, probably.
No, they didn't.
Dear, oh dear. So it obviously didn't last that long.
I think it was very cheaply bought, probably because it was on its last legs. And but it was a rather nice-looking yellow bus with green signage on the side.
No, we must say, at the time, everybody had this dream of having a bus and driving off into... you still see it up at Byron and Ballina, people in their buses, but they're those Toyota things now.
Yeah.
They're not quite as big.
Do you remember where its poor carcass lay?
No.
When it died?
Would have been parked on someone's farm, I imagine.
Right? Oh, yes.
And used as another room.
Those were the days, weren't they, when you could do stuff like that?
Okay, so are you ready for me?
No, yes. we're not yet.
We're not.
We're going to play some music before we get ready for
music.
You.
Good.
Yeah. This is a Mexican garage rock band.
Really?
Yes, they're called The Question Marks and the Mysterians. They had a number one hit with this song, 96 Tears, in 1966. The lead singer, Question Mark, and that is his actual name, he changed it by Deepole, claimed he'd been born on Mars and had been living among dinosaurs. Oh. And he also said that he had dreamt that he was going to continue be singing this song in the year 10,000. His sneering attitude and suggestion is a suggestion that I can't speak this morning, I'm sorry. The lead singer's attitude was one of the first that was this kind of sneering one that has often been said that perhaps he laid the trail opening up garage rock into punk.
So what period are we talking about?
This is 1966, this song hit number one.
Oh.
This is 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Well, I think he's lucky to make it to 2017.
Yes.
I rather liked that.
I liked it too.
Hammond organ.
The Hammond, or it's sounding like a Wurlitzer.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
I like it, but I think that maybe in a couple of years I'll be sick of it.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you've got a whole lot of things to
do. Well, I've got a few things to talk about. First, have you heard about Donald Friend's problems?
What sort of problems?
No. Well, apparently you can't buy a Donald Friend painting at auction anymore, and that many regional galleries are taking
it down. Because he's a pedophile.
Because someone published some letters where Donald describes the joy and unhurried delight his Balinese lover gave him, which seems lovely until you realise that Donald's 58 and his Balinese lover is a 10-year-old boy. Which
it's hard to come back from that.
It's it's something which is shouldn't have any bearing on, you know, he's dead and gone, and that apparently Donald was quite upfront about his preference for boys, and that the boys in Bali those days were willing if you paid them.
Yes, so it wasn't his artistic life that was...
So this is what we're doing. We're judging somebody who's dead and gone on on some letters, and we're saying, oh, this guy's... Because some of the paintings are of these boys, and they're beautiful paintings. You would have no idea that they're... Mm. You know.
I would point out that Caravaggio was a murderer.
Well, this is it.
His paintings can still be got at auction.
No, they can't.
Oh. They're all gone. Well, they could be.
They're all in museums. It
is very difficult. I think all art is being judged through that paradigm of political correctness.
Absolutely. And so if you want to go, you go Caravaggio, there's Leonardo was homosexual, Michelangelo.
Homosexual is different from pedophiles.
I know, but then there's also... It's not just about pedophilia. It's about judging whether they were morally correct or not, which is, in most of the cases, most artists are sort of pushing the boundaries a bit further than some people. Maybe not, but whether this should have any bearing on their art is a question.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it stops me from enjoying... I couldn't possibly approve of his behaviour sexually, or
it's not for us
choice
to
of lovers, but I think that his work is delightful.
It also makes me wonder a little bit too about the nature of art patronage and how that has changed, and whether or not this kind of moral political correctness relates to corporate identities wanting to associate themselves with notions of...
Interesting idea, but I think it's more to do with the younger people.
Do you think our younger people...
Yes, I don't think I think corporates have... Yeah, they don't have the sort of the moral backbone to actually impose any sort of morality on what they're doing, because a lot of these corporate people have... They're questionable themselves.
And to take this further, of course, Mark, does that mean that people are going to stop screening Weinstein production films?
Well, this is just what I'm coming on to. Harvey, who apparently, it's all his mother's fault, because she found him in the toilet when he was 13 and called him fat and ugly because he was looking at bra ads in New Yorker magazine and stuffing himself with Oreos. Mm. And he never recovered from that.
I might try that.
Yeah. Yeah. You've heard of the Me Too hashtag campaign.
Yes, indeed.
So now there's another one called Why Not Me Too hashtag for all those aspiring actresses who were never asked to, give a massage to Harvey. So there's quite
that is terrible. I'm going to call that one out. That is not correct. It now, is a very interesting thing.
Look, so look, we can talk about Hollywood briefly if you like.
Now, go on then.
Hollywood, I've never been there, but I have been sort of involved in the film industry a little bit and seen the sort of ins and outs of it. It's not a pretty place.
It's not a pretty place.
And when you get to all these sort of this supposed glamour and beauty, which is all about these a lot of young, wide-eyed, firm breasted young girls going to become the next star just through their beauty and their freshness. It's a dangerous place to go, and it's filled with cynical men like Harvey, who will take advantage of those situations just through their naivety.
Yes, he's not alone, I'm sure.
He's not alone.
And neither is it purely the grounds of Hollywood that this kind of behavior.
No, it's all through.
It's through every industry.
But then when you get people like that actress Rose McGowan, who I've never seen, I don't know what she's like as an actress, but she's saying, it's war now, we're going to fight and bring out all these horrible men. Look, I guess it is based on a fairly true idea. The problem is that I don't know about you, John, but I was harassed by many women during my youth and it's even still now sometimes, and I find it quite difficult. But I just accept it as being that's the way it is.
Yeah, I think what you won't have suffered quite so much is this power play that occurs with it. Certainly, there's sexual predation that comes from both sides of the fence. Mm. However, it is much more endemic, much more devastating, the power imbalance that there is between older men and younger women. Mm. And that pervades every woman's life and has.
I think a lot of men's life as well. This whole idea of patriarchy, you've got men sort of trying to put power over you all the time. Look, it is a problem. And we're dealing with it apparently, but I think we should be very careful about not to.
Before Harvey got into trouble, I was aware of the term casting couch.
Yeah, of course.
And I had a pretty good idea of what that meant, and not that I approve of that at all in any sense. But it seems to me that a lot of people are behaving as if. They've caught Harvey out and they're exposing something that no one knew anything about, no one knew was going on, and now the media is letting us all know what was going on. Well, I think we all knew.
Of course, and do you know who the journalist was who brought it out? It was Mia Farrow's son, Peter Farrow, who's the estranged adopted son of Woody Allen.
He's not very happy with Woody.
He's not very happy with men, and so he was the one who brought this out. And it is true, as you say, there was this phenomenon, and I think Angela Jolie is the perfect example of how to respond to those sort of that situation. Just never deal with the guy again, And a lot of these people, they knew that, and they still were dealing with him because they knew their film, they'd make millions, and they were going for the power. I think the most terrible thing about it is his modus operandi, the way that he just asked each one of them for the same thing, a massage and, come up to my room. It was just so, that's pathetic.
I don't think that is the worst thing about it at all. I think the worst thing about it is that this is a situation that pervades everything. And I think it is wonderful that it actually is being spoken about now, because I think that there has come a point when there's enough bravery and there's enough solidarity for women to feel that it is okay. But this situation has affected women's lives across the board in every industry. And I say, great, let's talk about it. Let's burst the pustule. Let's change it.
There's also an issue of what it's actually about in part, which is that that particular industry has got so much money sloshing around in it that that sort of behaviour is almost bound to happen,
Well, it's also the
money and power and the hungry pursuit of it are going to end up in a casting couch somewhere.
That's a full sort of shortened version. I think it's once again the whole idea of Hollywood and film, the film industry, is based on this glamour and this it's sexualized by the it has to be, because people are not going to look at it mostly. But, you know, that is part of it. It's not a pretty scene.
They're selling sex, you mean.
And also making the most, you know, all these young girls who are drawn towards it, like by the fact that they can make a lot of money by just sort of acting.
Or they can make it onto screen. I think, you know, for lots of them, it isn't about money, and lots of them don't ever make that money. It's flaunted in front of them.
We have to be very careful not to blame the women, because it's not their fault in any way. It's Harvey's sort of behaviour that's at question here. But also a question, I think, is the behaviour of the media in a sort of feeding frenzy, which is almost as disgusting.
Yeah, really. Yep, it is.
Okay, well, look, moving on.
Moving on, okay, what have we got next?
Well, the Point Leo Estate, which is opening, opened last Wednesday. It's a magnificent spot with a lovely three-star restaurant, I guess, and cafe.
Your favourite, Patricia Pecini?
She's not there, Patricia, thank God. But there is my other favourite, Deborah Helpen, who I don't call her stuff sculpture. I think it's just sort of cement with a bit of ceramic put on top of it, which fall to pieces very quickly. Unfortunately, it takes up a large part of the view of Port Phillip.
Deborah Helpen?
There is, unfortunately. Okay. But there's also a very beautiful James Plentzer. There's a few other people whose name I don't forget. It wasn't quite finished when I was there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going there for lunch this week.
Yeah, it's a magnificent spot. There's no doubt about it. And they've got a lot of ambition.
Where is it exactly?
Between Merricks and Point Leo. It's up the hill. They've been doing a lot of work on the road there.
So near the Point Leo Road.
Before the Point Leo Road. It's coming from Balnarring. It's on, you'll see it, there's a big sign saying the entrance.
We used to go surfing down there. It was always a little bit low rent around there.
It was, it's all no longer the case.
Not anymore, no.
So one last thing.
Yes.
There's a film coming out called Loving Vincent.
Yes.
Which is, it's the last few days of Vincent's life. And it's based on his paintings, which have been animated, and they have real-life characters in there.
Oh, I've seen
there's something like 125 painters working full-time. It's taken about 7 years to do it. And it's a story of Vincent's, as I said, the last few days of his life. And it's about the Arnaud Roulin, who was the postman, who, after Vincent's death, went looking for his brother. What was his name? Theo.
Yeah.
And Theo was dead. They kicked Vincent out of Arles because they thought he was a madman and they couldn't stand him. He was disturbing too many people. And this guy thought, I should try and find out what happened. Vincent was dead, Theo was dead, and then he realized that Vincent was a genius and that had been completely misinterpreted in Arles. And so it's a story about, you know, one of the characters in the painting becoming real and looking for Vincent.
Uh-huh.
And they've made the film is basically one of Vincent's paintings, or 94 paintings, which have been put into the film.
Well, probably quite a good choice of characters to go looking for Vincent, because the painting of the postman's just an absolutely beautiful painting.
Yeah, yeah. And they have the real actors.
Remember seeing that painting in Melbourne?
No.
Yeah, you do, at the Vincent show, and there was the painting of the swirling sky and the poplar trees and stuff, and it's such a painting with massive clout.
Yeah.
And The Postman, which wasn't there in that show, but that is also a painting with terrific clout. I've been near that painting and it has power emanating.
Yes, it does.
I'm not sure that I can't recall it.
Hmm.
I'll have a look.
Look it up.
I'm going to put it on
pretty
the page.
Pretty sure it's not in the part of it. It's not amongst the paintings that are at the Summer's Art Show.
No.
No. I'm sure
but
it
But other
isn't.
Paintings are there.
There's lots of other paintings and there's an auction coming up in a minute. Hmm.
In a minute.
Well, fairly soon, yes, of course. Of course, the Audible P team are going to take over from us after this show now, and they'll be broadcasting it. If you're in the vicinity of Summers and you're interested in art, then perhaps you should get down to the Summers Art Fair, because they're going to auction off some of their many, many paintings that are on display there. As you can hear, hark, It's time for the news. At the McClellan Gallery, there's a couple of exhibitions. I don't know if either of you two have seen these. It's Stephen Halley, Out of Place, 3D modelling software used to explore the virtual and actual environments of contemporary experience. Have you either of you heard of this?
Haven't heard of it, haven't seen it, but don't mind the sound of it.
Mm-hmm. And Tina Wencher, who is a sculptor, she comes from, I think she comes from Turkey or from the Eastern Europe somewhere. She's somewhat
Hungarian, I think. I saw that show.
Did you?
Yeah, very good.
Oh, is it?
Very good. Very classic, but lovely modelled heads in bronze. And
ah, okay. Well, that's on at McClellan until mid-November, so go and have a look at those.
Whistlewood From Nature, a spring salon exhibition until November the 12th. We love Whistlewood.
We do love Whistlewood, absolutely.
The Summer's Art Fair is on at the Summer's Primary School on today. A great day out, music, art and raising money for a great cause.
Yeah, that's right. And the Little Archies are on at the Oak Hill Gallery and will remain hung there until the end of October.
Cameron Robbins, who wants to run with this?
He's on
at Mars Gallery, yep. And you'll get a chance to see some of the incredible films that he's made and up close to the workings of the universe.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw his show in Kyneton.
Yeah, we were there.
Oh, you were all there. We were, weren't we?
Yeah. We were all there together.
We took you with us, Mark.
You were there too. There is also an exhibition on today for the Peninsula Studio Trail Artist at Sorrento Community Centre until 4 this afternoon, Sunday the 29th. Some artists will do a demonstration of techniques and or materials, and there are musicians playing on Sunday afternoon.
That's right. Memphis the Musicals open at Chapel on Chapel. Not sure how long that's going to be running, but tickets are on the venue website. I'll put a link on the Facebook page.
Don't forget to vote for our local entrepreneurs, Music on the Hill and Baha, in the Age Music Victoria Awards. There's a link on the Facebook page, and you have till November the 12th to get your votes in.
That's right. And don't forget to vote for... said that, yes. Mm-hmm. Tim Storia's lithographs are hanging at John Cecil Fine Art, Arthur Seat Road in Redhill, until the 18th of November. So we had a great chat today with John Cecil, who runs the gallery there, and it seems like it would be worth it. If you're a Tim Storia fan, you better get down there and have a look at those beautiful works.
Wayne Eager at Eastgate Melbourne.
Yes, we were supposed to.
Great show.
Was it?
Yep.
Yeah, I wanted to go and see that. Too sick.
It'll be on for the next month or so.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm. Get along and see it, everybody. If you have just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. We'd love to hear from you. So if you visit or like our Facebook page, you'll find links to some of the things we've been talking about on the show and also get a reminder about what and who's coming up next. You'll find a link to that Facebook page on the RPP website. So join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday, or hear the repeat on Wednesdays at 12, or listen to the podcasts on the station website. RPP team are going to be taking over from us now at the Summer's Art Fair. Get down and have a look at the auction if you're interested. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
We know what we like, which is, not Harvey.
We don't like Harvey.
Harvey's not that bad. Come on, give him a chance.
Thanks, Brody.